It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18+. Slow Burn Media and Bill Huffman present Who Killed? A podcast that provides a voice for the voiceless.
When you look back, there are so many different things that we could have done or so many different things that have changed since that date that could possibly help. On October 2nd, 1999, my son went on a hike up in the Colorado Mountains and he walked off and he was lost. It was a situation to where no parent ever expects to be. A lot goes through your mind. You hope that you see him, you hope that everybody is doing the right things to find your child.
Then on a June day in 2003, two hikers came across clothes in the woods.
And there was never an official cause of death given in Jared's disappearance. And the case hasn't been officially closed in case new evidence is found 20 years later.
20 years later, there are few answers.
Yeah, just incredible. The effort that went in there and his father really seems to be in a good place, really at peace with everything.
Now finding peace in the unknown, like he says, and trying to make sense of what has happened.
Mark Salinger reporting tonight. Mark, thank you.
Rescue teams from across the state converged on the Big South Trail in Larimer County in search of Jared. His father led the way.
There's mountain lions in the area. Certainly that's a possibility.
Others say it was a person who did him harm.
So that they do not have to live the same horror story I lived through.
He would be in his mid-20s now, but Jared Atadero will forever be the 3-year-old boy with a smile and curiosity that is impossible to forget.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of My Passion Case, a Slow Burn Media production. I am your host, Bill Huffman, and on this week's show, I'll be discussing one of Colorado's most infamous and mysterious unsolved disappearances with the one and only Aaron, the co-host of the Generation Y podcast. We will be discussing the disappearance of 3-year-old Jared Atadero. On October 2nd, 1999, Jared disappeared while on a hike with a group of family friends, and he was only 3, but his sister, who was 6, was attending the same hike, so after some begging to his father, Alan Atadero let Jared go, and little did he know that this would be the last time that he would actually see Jared alive. Now, I'm going to jump into my conversation with Aaron, because Aaron's spoken with Alan before, who has also written a book, and has been a pretty normal presence on the media side of things. So he definitely knows his stuff, and Aaron is a wealth of information when it comes to this case. So we're going to go right into my conversation with Aaron, skip all the perfunctory stuff, and let's begin. What makes the case so intriguing to you?
Well, honestly, there are so many cases that I could focus on. This one stands out to me because I spoke with his father, I read his book, and I spent a good amount of time researching this case before I covered it. So it's set in pretty deep.
Now, was this something that you had known about when you first started podcasting? I know you guys are like basically the first in the true crime podcasting genre and kind of set the tone for what the future held. So do you feel like he was open and honest with you when you spoke to him?
Yes, because in researching different cases, and I don't blame anyone for taking this approach, but many people sort of have to decide what happened. They need some sort of closure. And I found with Alan Atadero that he doesn't know what happened to his son, and he leaves it open. And in fact, in his book, he has, I think, up to 8 different theories as to what could have happened to Jared.
It's just such an interesting case. I mean, can you give me just a little bit, you know, the listener, just a little bit of background on what exactly had happened in the situation that led to him disappearing?
Alan had purchased a resort, and he was working on it, getting it ready to open. And so he had his daughter and his son with him, and they were both younger, although his son, I think, was only about 4 years old, if I'm not mistaken. And his daughter was a little older than that, I think 2 or 3 years older. And so he's working hard, but he needs to spend time with his kids. And yet he has a Christian singles network group that are from Denver out at the resort at the time as well. And he kind of knows them. And so they're saying, hey, we're going to go for a little walk down to go visit this. It's kind of like a fish hatchery.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, well, it's not too far away. I guess, you know, my daughter can go, but his son wants to go. And so he's like, well, there will be adults there. Sure. You know, he can go. But it was one of those things where you make that decision. You say, yeah, my kids can go. They can't go. But he's been really busy with this resort. And his wife's not around because he's separated at the time or divorced. And again, there are a lot of adults around. So he figures it'll be fine.
So his wife wasn't actually there.
Right. I believe they were either separated or divorced at the time.
Okay. I was wondering about that because you guys referred to her as just, or he actually referred to her as Jared's mother. So I thought that was unusual, but that explains that.
So they leave. But what he doesn't know is they go down to the hatchery. They're all thinking, we're not done. We want to do something else. So let's go on a hike. So they end up going yet even further away from the resort, which is, I think, another mile and a half. And so, it was a mile and a half to the fish hatchery. And then mm-hmm. It's about 15, 16 miles to the Big South Trail where they decide to go, because this is in what he calls the Puda Mountains in mm-hmm. Colorado. It's very scenic. And if you've ever been hiking, I don't know. I love hiking and I wish sure. I could go more often, but they decide they're going to go, but they're taking these two kids with them.
16 miles.
Yes. And this isn't anything that I guess they thought was a big deal, but they go on this hike. And while they're hiking, I think they forget about Jared because he runs ahead of them and everyone's talking. Most of the adults there, I don't think, have it in their heads that they need to watch these children. There is a woman named Janet who knows Alan. And she especially liked his daughter. She liked to spend time with her. And so they were kind of talking and stuff, but they lose track of Jared. Now, this is, of course, down the line here, but there are some fishermen out there who see Jared and they briefly talk with him. But long story short, for whatever reason, Jared disappears. And by the time they realize that he's missing, well, you know, this is a huge area. All kinds of things could go wrong, whether it's people, mountain lions, accidents, what have you. And so by the time he's informed that Alan's informed, all he knows at that point, because I asked him, I said, were you upset when you found out that they hadn't really watched your son? He said he was really upset, but all he had in his head was, we need to find Jared. And so he wasn't angry at anybody at that point in time. But man, you think you're going on this big hike, and for adults, it's probably not a big deal, but a four-year-old, we don't know at what point their energy fades or they could have an accident and they don't have any idea what to do. Heck, most adults don't know what to do probably, but this is a child.
Yeah, that was one thing that stood out when he was talking about it. He's like, well, he was a really, really athletic, you know, child. And I just thought 16 miles is just so, I mean, I used to run cross country and track and lived out in Utah and hiked and did all that stuff. And I mean, that's the, you know, no pun intended, but that is literally a hike just to even get to the trail that they're going to. So I just found it so bizarre that the adults that took these children, they're four and six or something like that. I mean, these are little kids. These aren't, I mean, okay, 8 years old, maybe we can start talking about letting them kind of run ahead and do their thing. But four and six, your interview with her father or with his father was just like, if I was his dad, oh my gosh, I don't even know if I could have handled just even discussing how in the hell did you allow this to happen? Because this isn't what you said you were going to do. And somehow this child is gone and there's no sign of him.
Two of the women that were part of the group were the ones to inform Alan. And he found out that Janet had left with Jocelyn, but she hadn't brought Alan with her. She just assumed that Jared was with the other people.
That's so weird. Well, what do you think about, I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, do you think Janet had any, was there any, I don't know, anything nefarious going on there with Janet? Or was it just, she figured, did she even know that Jared was missing at that point? Or did they just turn around and go home?
Well, at one point, Janet and Jocelyn had fallen asleep, I think, against a rock or something. So I think that Janet just was enjoying her time hanging out with Jocelyn.
Okay.
And completely forgot about the boy because she figured, oh, we're all together. There's a lot of assumption going on here. Mm-hmm. I will say that no one's going to care about your kid like you will. And so when it comes down to things like this, unless you have someone who you absolutely can trust, there's a huge amount of risk in letting some group that you sort of know take your children. So there is plenty of blame to go around. But, you know, when it comes down to the father, I think he was just trying to be nice to his kids because he probably understood that, you know, their life had changed. Their parents had split up. And it's one of those situations where you try to step away from your fears and say, I want my kids to have some fun. And right now I'm really busy. So they'll be with this group and everything will be fine. And as we know, things aren't always fine.
Yeah, especially with the way that things turned out. I mean, do you feel like this Christian singles group, I mean, do you think there was anything there that was suspicious? I mean, did anybody, I mean, as far as suspects go, were there anybody in that group that became a suspect?
I don't think so. In fact, when it came down to it, everyone seemed to be pretty upset and they felt very bad about what had happened. But when it came time to get together, it seemed like Janet wasn't around. I think it took her a little while to face Alan because she really did feel responsible, I think.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess that makes sense. I mean, if she was the one that, you know, was supposedly in charge of the two of the children, I can see that being the case. But as far as all the other adults, I mean, did they have anything to provide to the authorities, to the people that ended up becoming part of the search parties? I mean,
well,
did they?
We'll get to the search parties, but as far
yeah,
as
like, yeah, okay, I'm
boy,
sorry.
No, they, you know, a number of them saw Jared running ahead.
Okay.
And then there were the two fishermen who gave some statements.
Which is odd because he's a 4-year-old.
Yeah, I think the way they said it was, I think they knew there were other people nearby, so they didn't think a lot of it. But I don't know. As a parent myself, I've never let my 4-year-old run away from me like that. But maybe I'm more paranoid, and maybe that's because of my consumption of true crime.
Yeah, I mean, it's very possible that your exposure to just what your job is and what your exposure is, yeah, definitely can play a role in it. But nonetheless, as a fisherman or an adult, you see a 4-year-old, especially the way Alan describes the terrain being as rugged as it was. I mean, I don't care if you know people are coming or not, but I mean, you should, and I'm not placing blame, and I feel bad that they even had to be involved, but the fact that they didn't stick around and make sure that this kid got back together with this group of people. I mean, we're not, again, talking about somebody that's like, you know, preteen or we're talking about a 4-year-old. I mean, a 4-year-old weighs 40 pounds. I thought that was such a weird aspect of the story. And did those, I mean, were they, obviously they were open and honest with the investigators because I don't believe they were ever named as suspects or anything, correct?
Well, suspects is maybe not the right way to look at this because at that point it was a missing person.
Okay.
And so, as you know, and there are many cases out there that get off on the wrong foot.
Okay.
This one, I don't know that it got off on the wrong foot, because I think the only way to categorize this is missing person. Because as far as we can tell, the people that Jared and Jocelyn were with weren't bad people. Now, they may not have looked out for the kids that were with them very well, but there wasn't anything intentionally wrong with their actions. It's just they should have been better about keeping an eye on them. Now, Jocelyn never left Janet's side, as far as I can tell.
Well, that's a good, I mean, at least there's that aspect of things, but she's 6 and Jared's 4. And I mean, I get it. I mean, I was a 4-year-old boy. I mean, I ran around, and yeah, I do definitely understand living out west what it's like to be in that environment and sort of just kind of get lost in the, you just get lost in the wilderness. I mean, no pun intended to say that he's actually lost, but just to say that you find yourself in just awestruck, especially if you're a child, of just the vastness of everything. It's just, it's not what you see on a daily basis, for sure, at least in my opinion.
For a child, their focus changes at some point, I'm sure. It goes from wonder and excitement to, oh my, where am I? Where is everyone? And so for Alan, he thought, okay, let's calm down. Let's just go back to the trail. Maybe when he hears my voice, he'll come out. Maybe he was in hiding. Maybe he got scared. And so he went back up there to the trail, and he called for his son over and over again. And then after a while, he realized, I can't do this. I need to bring in everyone. So then it was time to contact the sheriff's department. And the sheriff's department was run by Sheriff Alderton, but he's also a big part of this case, because so many people, when they found out what was going on, you had search and rescue teams, you had people with tracking dogs. They were all volunteering their time and money, you name it. And as they called in, because of course they were referred to the sheriff's department because of jurisdiction, the sheriff was informing his office, hey, let them all know we don't need their help. And they had to turn away time and time again, all these different people. And it came down to, there was a tracker that actually showed up, and he was told to leave by the sheriff, and he straight up told the sheriff, hey, you tell me to leave, I'm going to turn around, I'm going to go down to the media, because the media had been gathering. And he said, I'll tell them what you told me. I'll tell them that you weren't allowing me to search, and I'll give them my credentials. I should be here. So the sheriff reluctantly let him stick around. But for the most part, they didn't bring in outsiders. It was the sheriff's department looking.
Do you believe that that is more of an ego thing, or it's my way or the highway type of thing for that type of department?
I don't pretend to know what this sheriff was thinking, but if someone said, what's your best guess? My best guess is he wanted the credit for finding the boy. And so if he brings in outsiders, someone else is going to get that glory.
Do you feel like he was, if he asked, like, you know, this is such a, I guess this is even pertains to just so many things in life, but like if he asked for help, that he was kind of admitting not fault, but just
inadequacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's ridiculous, because I mean, for me, it doesn't matter who wins the day, right? We just want the day won. If this boy is missing and there's a chance to find him, bring in everybody you can find that can help track him down, because time is everything. And the each hour that goes by, the risk of that boy not making it just increases exponentially, I'm sure.
Now, as far as the search parties go, so was the sheriff just in charge of, he had one search party and that was it? And he was in charge of it?
He organized the searches, and he also had a helicopter brought in. But he didn't even allow the family to search. You know, he even told Alan and the others, I will have you arrested.
What? Really? And the rationale behind that?
I don't know.
And, okay, so he brought in the helicopter. What happened to the helicopter?
Well, and this is something that was, and of course, before the helicopter took place, there was a prayer service, and that's where the Christian Singles Group and Janet they weren't all there because Janet decided she wasn't going to go. And like I said, I think it was because of her guilt. Now, all that Alan can think about is his son. And all of a sudden, there comes a time where sirens are going off, lights, lots of vehicles are racing up the canyon. So Alan thinks they know something, they found something. But it wasn't about his son. The helicopter had crashed.
Ugh.
And now I asked Alan what happened with the helicopter, and no one really wanted to talk to him about it. But it seemed as though, as best as he could tell, that the helicopter had gone too low and somehow lost lift and fell through the trees. Now, luckily, no one died. But yeah, if your son's missing, it's been a media thing. And then all of a sudden, all these ambulances and other vehicles are racing into the canyon. And then it's, you think it's about your son, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's another crushing blow.
How long after that, or like how long after they were searching, did the helicopter crash occur?
I actually don't remember, but it was not long after Jared went missing. I think it was just within days.
Okay. So now as far as what happens at this point, so they're, you know, they've got the search parties, helicopters crashed, and they're going nowhere. What ends up happening?
Well, an interesting thing happens. So maybe so far people are saying, what's so mysterious about this? The boy just got lost and they can't find him. Maybe he died out there, but they couldn't find anything associated with him. They flew the helicopter around. They didn't see anything. Of course, it ended up crashing. But a 6'4" tracker named Sue was in the resort shop and started talking to Alan. I can't remember if he was buying something or if he just was making small talk, but he learned who Alan was. And he said, you know what? I've been out there tracking and I think I know where Jared went. And of course, Alan's excited. He's like, whoa, you know, like, let me know. And he's like, let me draw you a map. And so Sue drew this map up. Alan decided to take the map straight to the sheriff. Now, so far, the sheriff had not been treating Alan kindly at all or anybody associated with him. But he still took the sheriff the map because he realized this is the sheriff's territory. He might be turning away all this help, but he's the only thing I've got going right now. So he took on the map, and the sheriff didn't want it. He didn't care.
Why was the sheriff holding a grudge against Alan? I mean, was it the fact that he had reached out to the media and was kind of saying, you know, this is what's going on? Or, I mean, where did the disconnect come from with the sheriff and the family?
I think he just didn't want them interfering.
He just wanted the credit?
That's my guess, but I don't really know. But yeah, he just didn't want them interfering.
So, okay, it's been, you know, he goes missing. When do they decide, or when do the searches start to slow down?
You know, I can't remember at this point in time. I think it was weeks, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can't keep going on at full steam if there's no evidence of anything. I mean, if you don't have anywhere to go, then...
And there was none.
You're right. So they found nothing. And in all their searching, do you know how many people were involved in the search?
I think they had a very good number of people. But again, it was the searches were set up by the sheriff and his department.
Okay. So they searched for, you know, let's say a number of weeks, a couple months, things slow down. They kind of shut down the command center.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
I mean, is that basically how it went? I mean, did it just become a cold case at that point?
I don't know if it became cold because, again, this is the sheriff's department. And in their mind, I think they did what they could. In fact, the reason that was given for we're not going to look in this area where you've got the map focused on, that's because we flew over that area with the helicopter and they didn't see anything. So at that point, it was there's not much else to do, kind of a waiting game, see if anything comes up over time. I mean, people hike out there and, you know, they often find bodies because hunters will go through a certain area and they'll be tracking through an area that most people don't go through and sure. They'll end up finding something.
Yeah. I mean, there's a number of cases where a hunter is the first to discover a body. What was the next like major break in the case?
Well, it's about 3.5 years later. Jeez. That Jared's clothing is found. And the crazy thing about this, and there are a lot of crazy things in this case, but the crazy thing is when they look at where his clothing was found and they check the map, because Alan had kept the map, it was within 35 feet of the X.
From the tracker?
Yes, when the tracker drew him a map. It was 35 feet away from that X.
And that's the same map that the sheriff said that we don't need any, we don't need that.
I mean, I don't know if you're married, but I know if I can't find something, I'll often tell my wife, you know, hey, will you take a look? She'll find it right away. And this is the thing is you can have someone look, but that doesn't mean they'll find it even if it's there.
True. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely one that needs more eyes on something than my own, but 35 feet. So where the tracker had placed Jared's, you know, possible location, where was that in relation to, I guess, the last time he was seen?
That's the crazy thing. Is where his clothing was found and eventually his bones, because they did end up finding some bones later.
Okay.
And that's kind of a controversial thing, but it's kind of in an area that you'd have to hike up and climb up to. And no one that as far as I can tell, no one really thinks a 4-year-old could reach that area.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Colorado. I mean, I've been hiking, and I just don't. It's no place for a 4-year-old, is what I'll say.
So this is where theories come in.
Okay.
And there's this idea that maybe a large cat had taken him up there, because a large cat could probably take a 4-year-old up there. But they checked his clothing. They analyzed it to see if they could tell if any predators had attacked it or anything. But I don't think there was any evidence of that. And not only that, but one of the pants legs was pulled out. So it's almost like when you pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
So the clothing really didn't tell him much other than this is probably where Jared ended up.
Now, were the bones, you mentioned they were controversial. Were they found near the clothing?
I can't honestly remember at this point in time, but
okay.
I just remember there being some controversy about the bones and whether they were Jared's or not. And as far as I recall, Alan ended up accepting that they were Jared's.
Interesting. Okay, so at the end of the day, I mean, has anybody been held responsible for this? I mean,
I don't know how anybody's going to be held responsible for this, because it's like so many people dropped the ball. You know, you have Janet not really watching the kids like she should have. You have Alan, I guess, making the mistake of letting his kids go with this group. And I think he just trusted, you know, because of who they were,
mm-hmm.
and just thought, oh, they'll take care of them. And then you have the sheriff who is saying, yeah, we don't need volunteers. We have enough people. We don't need your tracking dogs. We already have good dogs. We don't have enough budget to bring in these military groups that were volunteering. None of that, even though these people were volunteering to go.
What are your feelings or thoughts about the sheriff?
Well, I think it's just one of those situations where in an ideal world, we would have people setting aside their egos for the greater good and saying, hey, I'll accept your help. Maybe the sheriff can give them guidelines. I mean, I've gone on, when I went on a search and rescue for a runner that was missing, and he was actually a youth pastor, we were given guidelines about where we could go and who we were going with. And I think in this situation, the sheriff should have utilized these people who are coming in with all their experience. He could have said, I'm going to limit you to these areas or whatever, but he just didn't want to mess with them. He didn't want them coming in.
That's interesting. Now, not to sidetrack real fast, but what was the, what search were you involved with?
It was actually a young guy. He was, I think in his 20s, and he had a wife and a little, infant son, and he was known to run around the Liberty area, and he just disappeared. And so when I was on the search, I was walking through all kinds of dense foliage and all kinds of weeds that ripped at my clothing, tore up my shoes, and we just went everywhere. The weird thing about that one was at some point I was online trying, I had a lot of free time on that week. And I was online and some guy had said, hey, I want to go look for him at the school, which is right across from everyone searching.
Okay.
And I thought, oh man, I'd love to go, but it's getting so late. And I'm not sure that they would approve of this. So I decided not to go. Turns out a week after this young guy disappeared, his remains were found in one of the porta potties at the school because they were doing construction by the school.
Not to like sidetrack, but what was the cause of death?
Well, he was a very fit man and a very good runner, but he had some sort of congenital heart issue.
Okay.
I think it was. Well, anyway, he had a cardiac event while he was on the toilet.
It's terrible.
He died. And so it was actually days before he was discovered, one of the construction workers was trying to get in there and it was locked. And he thought, oh, someone must be in there, even though they didn't answer. Mm. And then like so many days later, went back and tried it again. It was still locked, but now it didn't smell very good.
Mm-mm.
And so that's when he made a phone call.
Interesting. Yeah. As a former runner, well, as a runner, yeah, that's just, I actually had a friend's little sister. She just in the middle of cross country practice passed away from a random heart defect. You know, didn't know she had it. And I think she was 15 at the time. So, yeah, that's crazy. But like when something like that happens, I mean, as far as searching goes, did you get like a notification? Was there like did they do a public call for action? In Jared's case, would there have been other than the publicity from the media side of things, or do they actually like reach out to people, you know, say, hey, you know, we need volunteers? You know, I mean, I've seen a lot of cases where that's obviously the case, but you know, in Jared's case, seems like they were turning everybody away. How did the people that got involved in Jared's case even get the luxury of being involved other than, I mean, could they?
Yeah, I just don't know. I know in the local case that I was a part of, I just wanted to go help. And so I saw that they were going to have volunteers meeting at his church. And so I just went over there. And they had to turn away a lot of people because they didn't need everyone that showed up. There were a lot of people that showed up.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely run into a lot of situations. And I know that, you know, as a kid, I mean, the case that sticks with me is the, you know, the Mihaljevic case, the Amy Mihaljevic case. and, you know, how many people got involved with that. But I just think that's just, I think that just kind of goes with the territory as far as just, you know, any wanting to lend a helping hand. And the fact that a sheriff would turn away that experience, I mean, to me, that's what seems so, so off the mark on this case. I mean, this seems like something that could have been solved within days, if not a day, if there would have been more people involved.
There's always that chance, but the area is so large, so vast, and a child of his size could easily fall into a bush and you wouldn't see him. But, you know, as part of the theories that are attached to this case, one thing you look at is, what did they find on the clothing? Well, they didn't find any hair, no blood. They checked the temperatures. The temperatures the night he was gone was low 40s. So for a small child, that might be pretty bad.
That's pretty bad.
The different theories out there, mountain lion attack, but they didn't really see any evidence of that on his clothing. The bones, there wasn't really enough left to tell anything. The other thing is there was a supposed sighting of Jared, and this was at the Mesa Verde National Park. A sheriff's deputy said that he saw a boy that looked like Jared, who he'd seen on the TV, with a man. And he said the boy was trying to get away from him. And of course, the deputy just didn't think much of it because he thought, oh, that's his child and the child's just being difficult. This feeds into the theory that someone had parked. There's actually like a parking area, which if someone had taken Jared, could have made it back to that parking area and driven away from the park. And so for Jared's clothing, the one thing that really stood out were his shoes. It didn't seem like his shoes were in as rough a shape as they should have been for being out there in the mountains for 3.5 years. And so there's this theory that someone took Jared, killed him, and then brought his remains back to the park because maybe they suspected if they found him there, then they'd figure, oh, he died there and he wasn't kidnapped. That's one theory. Another theory, aside from that and the mountain lion, is that Jared simply died of exposure, that he got lost, maybe had an accident, and then who knows, maybe animals did get to his clothes and scatter them. But it's just the mystery of this case is, why would he be found in an area that a four-year-old wouldn't be able to get to on their own? It just doesn't seem possible. And if it was a mountain lion, how come his clothing doesn't show any evidence of a mountain lion attack?
I remember seeing online the picture of, I mean, if you Google it, there's a picture of Alan with the shoes. And yeah, they do not look like shoes that have been in the wilderness for 3 years, 3.5 years. And I mean, that, God, I mean, that just drives so many different conspiracy theories on how, when, but I mean, you know, it's like Occam's razor, you know, most likely answer is he probably had an accident or was attacked by an animal. And I mean, how else do you get where you're going or where his clothes were found? How else do you get there? It's not like, in my opinion, I don't feel like somebody would have killed him 3.5 years later, brought his body back, and then gone through the trouble of putting it where they found it. I mean, what is your thought on that?
I don't know if this works, but I almost wonder if he had an accident, if he fell to that area somehow, because as you know, the mountains, they, you know, the escalation we're talking about as you go up, up, up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how a four-year-old does all this, but that's what makes it difficult, is how do you explain where he got where he got? I don't know if he could have fallen to that area from a higher up area, but to me, it seems most likely that he died out there not long after he went missing. And so in my mind, I think it was an accident. I think something happened to him and it wasn't from a man. He could have been startled by an animal and run and fallen and hurt himself or whatever. But again, I don't think there's any way to solve this case. I don't think it would ever be solved, but it's always stuck with me because I feel for Alan, knowing that he lost his boy and he did what he thought he could do to try and find him. And it was roadblock after roadblock. And then when they finally get answers, they don't solve anything. They just pose more questions.
Yeah, and I'm sure that your conversation and your talks with Alan have definitely made this case much more personal. And listening to your interview, I mean, it's definitely worth seeking out for any listener who hasn't heard it yet. You know, I think it's one of your, like, I don't know, 175 or something like that, episode 170.
It might be 171.
171, see, you know. As you should. But yeah, it's absolutely worth listening to if you want to learn more about this case. It's so crazy as far as what egos can do and how power can run amok, even when it comes to missing children. And even if it is just a complete accident, which in this particular case, it does seem like that's the most likely scenario. But I do feel like things probably could have been resolved sooner if there would have been more teamwork, you know, and I hate to use the expression, but, you know, teamwork makes a dream work. And, you know, what you had at that point in time was a missing child, and getting that child back, whether he was alive or injured or dead at that point, you know, the sooner the better. And I just think that's my opinion on that, on the case. And I really appreciate you taking the time to explain why this case is, you know, you're so passionate about.
Well, and one other thing I'd like to mention is that I think the biggest blow to this case was when Alan discovered that the tracking dogs had the wrong clothing. They didn't have samples of Jared's clothing to find him. They were actually using Alan's shorts. And so when he went and verified what clothing they were using, he held up the shorts and said, "These are mine. Do you think any 4-year-old would fit into these?" And everybody just looked at him. They were giving the scent, the scent to the dogs, but the scent was Alan's, not Jared's.
So basically, this case is a prime example of missing every opportunity to get a solution sooner rather than later. I mean, come on.
It's amateur hour. And to know that they were doing this and shutting out experts because of ego, most likely. Mm-hmm. It just makes this even more painful, and not knowing. I mean, I know that's been a debate. I've been reading about different cases and how knowing versus not knowing, but man, let the parent who's missing their child, let them decide whether they want to know or not. And in this case, it seemed like they just kept shutting Alan out.
Yeah, I don't understand why they wouldn't let him search or be a part of, just assisting in getting people to help in the search. I just don't understand the sheriff's motives. I get the small town thing, but come on, it's a missing 4-year-old. This is this, you bringing in help can solve this case quicker than you, John Wayne, you know, style, trying to solve everything. You know, I'm the sheriff, I'm gonna take care of it. This isn't the old west. Like, we have the means, motive, you know, the means, motive, and opportunity. We have the means to get these things solved. So what in the world is this sheriff thinking? And I just feel so awful for that family that has to deal with the fact that this is a prime example of bureaucracy run amok.
And he still would have gotten the credit because he would have been the guy in charge saying, go here, go there. You know what I'm saying? This could have been still, he could have gotten some credit for the discovery of the boy if he had just allowed more help in. Maybe the trackers that had the dogs would have actually known to use the boy's clothing and not a man's clothing. It's just those little things that are so detrimental when you go the wrong way with them.
Yeah, I think, like you said at the beginning, you know, you start on one avenue and you go down that path, and well, once you're down that path, it's a little hard to find your way back. And, you know, no pun intended with the case, but it definitely feels like they were, you know, not going in the right direction right off the bat. So ridiculous.
You have the sheriff maybe as sort of the villain in this case, but if you think about it, so many people came out of the woodwork to try and help find the boy. And then later on, of course, Alan and his brother wrote the book When the Sun Sets, S-O-N, When mm-hmm. the Sun Sets, about Jared's case and about what the family went through, what happened with the searches. It's very detailed. And as a reader, I can tell you it's one of the best books I've ever read in terms of editing. So often I find spelling mistakes or grammar mistakes. This book is just amazing.
And that could be found on Amazon, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. And of course, I've read it. I read it before I spoke with Alan. He sent it to me, I believe, but I've also purchased it. And I'm always recommending it to people. We have a section on our website where we have recommended books, and I need to update it, but it's definitely on there.
Yeah, well, that's a great segue to one, saying thank you again for explaining your passion behind this case, and yeah, plug your show. Give Generation Y its due. So,
well, Justin, my co-host, and I, we've been doing Generation Y since 2012, and it's been amazing to watch the true crime genre in podcasts grow and grow. And we've met so many great other podcasters. It's an amazing community. Our website is genypod.com, or you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/generationy.
And you guys do a weekly show.
We have a weekly show, and my other podcast has a new series coming up, season 2, and that's Framed, an investigative story.
Awesome. Yeah, I've really enjoyed getting to know a lot of the true crime podcasters, and yourself included, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time to, you know, be so succinct with your feelings about this case and how this case could have gone in a totally different direction if it would have just been taken a little bit more seriously at the time.
And I think also it's cases like this that I really connect with, because I've known his dad for a little while. We communicate once in a while, and I know he's had his ups and downs. He has his days where he doesn't think that he can talk about Jared. The pain becomes too great. He feels like I think he almost feels like he's failed, but, you know, he'll end up coming back and he'll post a picture and say, here's my boy, and I love him and I miss him. And so I know that every day must be a struggle for him and his family.
Yeah, I think that goes for Alan and his family, and for all the victims that have, you know, all the families that have victims out there that, you know, cases that have not been solved, and even cases that have been solved. I mean, anybody that has to go through this type of trauma or tragedy, it's just not the way life should be. So, you know, it's important to keep these stories out there. And, I mean, you guys obviously started the trend with the whole true crime genre, but it is important to get these stories out there. And it is an advocacy type of thing. It's not necessarily, you know, murder of the week type stuff. This is, there are real families involved and there are real ways to help these cases and these families. So, again, appreciate you laying the foundation for us future podcasters.
Yeah, no problem. It was great to talk with you, Bill.
Hey, Aaron, seriously, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I guess if you get a chance, send me a link, because I have been in the past year and a half or so trying to check out other shows.
Oh yeah, but you're probably crazy as busy. So
oh, I trust me. But when I'm at my day job, I try to fit in a podcast or two here and there.
Okay.
And yeah, I'll check yours out.
Yeah, I'll send it your way. And yeah, I've gotten to become good friends with Nick from True Crime Garage. So that's been fun. And I talk to him probably every other week now. Just not even necessarily for the show. Just a BS. So.
Yeah, I've recorded a couple episodes with him.
We'll yeah, probably... I love your guys when you guys do those joint shows. They're fun. Just kind of changes the tables a little bit. So definitely really enjoy those. And I'm a big fan of Gen Y. I definitely have listened to, you know, I don't want to admit it, but probably all of your shows. So it is what it is. But just have the capability to do so. And I don't know. It was cool to meet you at CrimeCon. You probably don't even remember me, but this year we'll definitely.
I remember briefly talking with you, I believe.
But yeah.
It was really fast. It was.
Oh, yeah. You guys were freaking all over the place. And we were just all in that little corner. So that kind of was nice. And hopefully that will all work out again this year. But.
Well, yeah, there'll be Orlando next.
Yeah. Yeah. So
we'll be there.
Well, we should be there too. So I will catch up with you soon. But yeah, I will absolutely send you a link. And I'm like, I'm interviewing you today. I'm doing Maggie tomorrow.
Maggie? Yeah, from
Crawl Space.
Crawl Space, yeah.
Yeah. And then I've got Tim and Lance and Nick and the Captain and. You know.
Yeah, great people. Yeah. Yeah. Like them all.
Yeah. So good lineup. And so I can't say thanks enough.
Well, enjoy your evening.
Thank you, sir. You as well.
All right. Take care, Bill.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Thank you again to Aaron from Generation Y. Again, he is the co-host of the wildly popular Generation Y podcast. He can be found anywhere you get your favorite shows, and I believe they have a website, generationy.com. And again, thank you for tuning in to another episode of My Passion Case. I'll be dropping new episodes every Monday wherever you get your favorite shows. And for the second year in a row, I will be representing Who Killed My Passion Case, as well as Who Killed Amy Mihaljevic, on Podcast Row at CrimeCon 2020 in Orlando. That is May 1st through the 3rd. And if you want to save on a ticket, you can use my promo code AMY2020. And again, if you have never been, it is definitely a must for any true crime fan. And if you do enjoy this podcast and would like to help support the show, you can always click on the donate button on the left-hand side of slowburnmedia.com. That's slow minus the W. Or via the Venmo app with my username at bill-huffman-3. We'll also provide a link in the show notes. And again, any amount is appreciated, and it does help keep this podcast running. If you do enjoy the show and would like to leave a 5-star review, that's also a good way to keep these cases in the spotlight. And again, I'll be dropping new episodes of my other series, Who Killed, on Fridays, and new episodes of My Passion Case every Monday. If you'd like to stay up to date on the cases I have covered, as well as the new shows that I have coming down the pipeline, please follow me on Twitter at BillHuffman3. And you guys, thanks so much again for listening this week. Until next time, be safe.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Something is creeping. Don't follow it down.
Let me introduce you to Barry Clue, an authorised financial advisor from New Zealand and a very special kind of stain on humanity.
He was a very knowledgeable young guy.
He was a registered financial advisor.
Type of guy that was bending over backwards to help you.
Now, you could be forgiven for thinking that Barry sounds like a great guy. And you'd be right. Well, right up until the point when you're wrong.
It was all fictitious.
You stole from my son, who has a disability.
Chris never knew. He died believing that we're all taken care of.
A psychopath is somebody who lacks empathy, acts impulsively. I think there's a strong case that Barry might be all of those things, actually.
To find out how Barry Clue stole over $15 million from 81 victims, subscribe to Clueless, The Long Con. That's Clueless, spelt K-L-O-O-G-H-L-E-S-S.